Saint. My name's Deborah Hebert, and as Wes said, I came to Kansas City in 96 and was able to be a part of the time when God was awakening Mike with this Friends of the Bridegroom movement that was going to emerge. And then a few years after that was when IHOP started, and we got to be with him in that time and labor with him. And here we are, 12 years later. Wow. I believe that this is a Kairos hour. 12 years, God is doing something right now that is just stunning in the earth. And this one thing, as we know and we believe, marked something in the globe. I'm married to one of the great men of the earth, Murray, and we have three little girls. When Wes said that, I can't believe I have three girls. I mean, like, I'm really like a mom. How did that happen? I have a three-year-old and a one-and-a-half-year-old and a two-month-year-old. So, yeah, we're crazy. Good times, though. It's amazing. But here, as I'm looking back on the last 12 years, I truly already can join that song on the Sea of Glass and say, "Great and marvelous are your works, O God. Your ways are higher. Your thoughts are higher, far, far beyond what we can think or imagine. Your leadership, the way that you orchestrate our lives, it's stunning. Jesus, you are the rightful leader of the human race." Right now, let's just tell him this. Jesus, you are the rightful leader of the human race. You lead us with wisdom. You lead us with such love and tenderness and gentleness. Jesus, we thank you for your leadership in our lives. The circumstances that we cannot understand, we thank you ahead of time. Right now, as we're in the night of faith, when we cannot see, we dare to believe that what you are doing in our lives right now, it is good. It is perfect. We so trust you, Jesus. Father, we thank you that you've given your Son the leadership of the human race. We thank you. We thank you for your plans. I didn't mean to jump into prayer right there. So, Mike asked me to talk on the seven longings of the human heart. If you're not familiar, we wrote a book a few years back, and that's what it's called, The Seven Longings of the Human Heart. Just recently, Lenny LaGuardia asked me to write that same book for children. And so this past year, I just finished that. And what an exciting thing to take all of those truths and get them in the hands of children. This is what's going on right now. Children are going to direct their longings to Jesus before they've directed them elsewhere. A five-year-old is going to think it's normal to place his cold heart before the fire of Jesus and be answered. What is going on in this generation? We are seeing in the earth right now a generation arise that Jesus says in 2 Thessalonians 2, in that day when he comes, he is going to be glorified in his saints. What does it look like when Jesus is glorified in us? What does the full expression at the end of the age look like? What is it going to look like in Psalm 29 when it says, "Worship the Lord, O you mighty ones. In the beauty of holiness, give him the glory that is due him." We're on the brink in human history where we are about to see that happen. We're about to see Jesus' leadership take the most broken, perverted, dark generation and move us into holy, hot passion for Jesus. This wise leader is so confident that he's sitting on his throne and he's laughing. It says in Psalm 2 that he's laughing. The Father is pictured. They're laughing. He says, "I've set my Son on his holy hill. And when all the nations are raging against my Son, Watch out, Satan. I got a plan. I'm going to raise up a generation from every tongue and tribe and nation that is going to love my son. They're going to know what it's like. They've directed their all of the longings of their heart to this man. They've not given their affection to something else. They have not been swallowed up by the sinful pleasures. They haven't even been tempted by legitimate pleasures. No, they are wholly caught up in the superior pleasure of Jesus himself. Satan, I got a plan. And I'm so confident in my plan that the nations can rage against my son. The accusations can come against my bride. The shakings can have their way in the earth. My judgments can be loosed. Satan can do everything in his power to try to win her. And I sit here and I am laughing because my plan is good. And my plan will not fail. This is the time in human history that we're living in. And if anything, it should cause us to tremble. It should cause us to want to get really low. What, Jesus, are you doing right now? Satan is really excited in this hour for his plans for this generation. He's been working his plan for the last 6,000 years, and it's coming to its maturity right now. It says in Matthew 13 that the wheat and the tares are going to grow up and mature together. We're going to see wickedness. We're going to see evil come to its all-time crescendo. What is that going to look like? But at the same moment, righteousness, the beauty of holiness, is going to come to fruition as well. The dream in God's heart before Jesus returns to the earth, what does that look like? We're in that stage of human history. The final act of the drama is about to unfold. Here we are in Kansas City, nowhere. As that guy said, I love that, Kansas City, nowhere. Here we are. We're at the 12-year mark. God's doing something. And I want to, if anything tonight, I want to give those who are just beginning on this journey courage to keep going. And I want to give those who have not begun this vision, I want to ruin you with the vision to give your everything to this man, Jesus. To those of you who've lost their way, I want to give you hope. I want to call you back to this vision. To those of you that are nearing the end of your race, I think that I want to give you joy tonight as you hear that you have run your race well. So I want to begin here in Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 2. I don't know how familiar we all are with this book. If you're not familiar, get familiar. This is the book that Jesus saved for last. It's the glorious book of the unfolding of the heart of Jesus as the bridegroom God. It tells the journey of the bride. It gives us understanding of all the seasons of how we go from weak love to mature love. It is the book for this generation, I believe, with all my heart. So here in the beginning, she says this prayer. She's actually directing it to the Father. She says, Father, I'm adding that, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For your love is better than wine. She's saying, Father, here I am. I'm broken. I'm bruised. I'm wounded. I have anger. I have bitterness. I have fears. I have a messy heart. But here I am, Father. Let your son give me his affection. Let your son give me the kisses of His Word. All that You have for me, Father, I ask for this. Right now, I am daring to believe that Jesus can answer the longings in my heart. This vision I received when I was 19 years old. I remember I was reading Psalm 84, and it's, you know, where David is saying that my soul pants for God. My soul aches, it longs for the courts of the Lord. And I remember reading that, and I was uneasy. I was disrupted by it. I said, I don't know if that's really true. I don't know if I really ache. I don't really know if I hurt because I want You so much, Jesus. But I want to. I want to long for You. And it was in that time that He started unfolding this revelation of even these seven longings. That He had given me a certain design in my heart that I had seven longings. And of course, that's not comprehensive, but it's just that I had all of this ache and this longing, and that He Himself wanted to fulfill it. Now, you know, that's easily said, but if any of us in this room really believe that, we would change everything in our lives. We wouldn't have to go to anything else to make us happy, if that makes sense. Jesus would answer our longings. I remember after that, I felt like I needed to remove a lot of props in my life. I needed to remove a lot of those legitimate pleasures in my life to make room for the superior pleasure. I'm like, I don't feel, when I'm just alone with Jesus, I can be there for a while, but then I truly kind of get bored. You know, I have my Bible, I have my water, and here I am, Jesus, and it, you know, a little time was okay. I liked that. I had done that for a long time, but then I kind of got antsy. I'm like, oh, Jesus, I want to know You. I want You to be my all in all. I want to know this superior pleasure. So here I am. And I remember when I removed those props, I just became aware of truly how much I crave things. You know, that almost that, what I would say, a monster inside of me. I want, you know, I want to go to a movie. I want to just get out of this apartment. I want to go be with some of my friends. I want to go shopping. I want to do something. I ache. And just being alone with Jesus wasn't answering that ache. And He says, oh, but I'm ruining you with this vision. Father, let Him kiss me with the kisses of His Word. For His love is better than the wine of this world. The wine of this world is speaking of the legitimate good pleasures in this world. She is making this unbelievable confession. She says, His love, His burning affection for me, His desire for me is bigger, is better than, is more important to me than everything else. So here I am, Father. I wait. This is the starting point. She's being introduced to Jesus as a bridegroom. This is new. It says in Hosea 2:14 that in that day that we shall no longer call Him master, but call Him husband. Jesus has been waiting for this final hour. In that day, speaking of the final hours, it's speaking of the day of the Lord. In that time frame, Hosea sees this unprecedented revelation that there's going to be an hour when Jesus will make Himself known through His Holy Spirit as the bridegroom God. So this is the verse that is so critically important for us. Father, let Him kiss me with the kisses of His mouth, and His mouth is speaking of His Word. For Your love is better than anything this world has to offer. I want that to be my confession. Not that I say it, but that my life says it. That when people would look at my life, they would say, who? He really likes her and she really gets it. Wow. Briefly, these seven longings, and I, there's no way I could go into them tonight, but I just want to whet your appetite for this subject. The longing, number one, to be enjoyed by God. And I'm literally just going to name them. I encourage you to get the book. Longing number two, the longing to be fascinated. Longing number three, the longing for beauty. Longing number four, the longing for greatness. Longing number five, the longing for intimacy without shame. Longing number six, the longing to be wholehearted. Longing number seven, the longing for deep and lasting impact. All of these longings are in us. We wake up each day, and whether we know it or not, these longings are directing our life. They are steering our ship, so to speak. They're like the rudder. Beneath everything else are these longings that are why we do what we do. Why we spend our time the way we spend it. We all have these burning longings. And Jesus is looking to this generation going, I have a plan to answer these longings. In this age and in the age to come, I am going to ruin this generation by my affection. I am going to seek you out. I am going to shake everything that can be shaken for the sole purpose to win your heart. I'm going to show you what cannot be trusted. The things of man are going to shatter. They're going to be shaken. Everything that man can build, all the strength of man is going to fail. I'm going to disrupt you. I am going to allow Satan to sift you. All for the sole purpose of that I am seeking you out. I want your heart. I want to be your all in all. I want friends in this hour. And all across the earth right now, young ones, old ones, are responding to this voice, the voice of the bridegroom. They're saying, oh, may it be me. Why not me? Why not me? I want to respond to this voice of the bridegroom. I want to burn the bridges. I want to rearrange my life. I want to do what is necessary that I could come before this bridegroom king and he could answer the longings of my heart. Isn't this exciting? It's so exciting and it's so sober. In the days ahead, the body of Christ will have a fierce and determined spirituality. Yet we will have little or no tolerance for traditional religion. What we see in the church today, business as usual is not going to cut it. This generation is going to be given such great revelation. It is going to be given the truths necessary so that we can give ourselves in a surrender, so that we can give ourselves in an extravagant obedience that is unprecedented to any other generation that's ever walked the earth. We're going to receive His love in a way that's unprecedented. We're going to know Him intimately. We're going to know Him as friend. We're going to know Him as bridegroom, king, and judge. We're going to be overwhelmed with who He is. He's going to utterly fascinate us. He is going to let us feel enjoyed by Him. He's going to cast out fear as His love is perfected in us. But it's going to lead us at the end of the day, at the end of the age. It's going to lead us to give ourselves in a sacrificial love, in a surrender, in an extravagant obedience that is unprecedented. Does this make sense? To whom much has been given, much will be required. We are in a season that we will be receiving the affections of God. Day and night, receiving. Song of Solomon is an 8-chapter love song. The first half of the book, the bride is receiving. The main focus of her life is to receive the truths of His burning affections for her. If I can just do broad strokes like that. So chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, she is in this posture of seeing his beauty, the beauty he possesses, and then he imparts it to her. She's seeing his burning affection, and she's experiencing it, and she's receiving all of these things from him. She's sitting at that banqueting table, feasting on the truth of who he is. But then something switches in the midpoint of the book. As she has been all this focus of receiving, now her life becomes a drink offering. Now she is poured out. Now she becomes the expression of his love in the earth. She becomes the servant of all. She goes with him intimately through the fellowship of suffering. It's the Garden of Gethsemane moment for her. And she says, not my will, but yours be done. She's consumed with what burns on his heart. She gives herself as a friend of the bridegroom. See, Jesus, as the bridegroom, is obviously in love with the bride, isn't he? So as a friend of the bridegroom, it's interesting terminology, we are standing with Jesus as his friend, loving the bride, giving our lives for the sinner that they might say yes, giving our lives for the enemies of Christ, giving our lives for Israel. We are a friend of the bridegroom that is poured out that all the others would say yes. Does this make sense? We suffer long with him. And we count it joy. We face those trials and we see them as a privilege. We're persecuted and we get excited. We're cast down, but we're not destroyed. We're full of love. This is where it's going. We will say yes to his burning affection in this holy season that is unprecedented, but their season will change and this generation will be so caught up with what burns on his heart that we will say, yes, not my will, but yours be done. Jesus, let me go my way to the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. Jesus, take me. I say yes to the fellowship of suffering. I say yes, as you walked the earth and was the servant of all, I want to be the servant. I want to give my life for what burns on your heart, for your bride, for the enemies of Christ. I want to give my life. And again, that's easily said, but this is going to be a terrifying time to live. For those who attended One Thing, as Mike is reading the book of Revelation and is preaching and teaching us all that's going to happen. And as we read it, I mean, it's going to get pretty intense. I like intensity. I'm sorry for anyone who does it. This is a time of intensity. Intensity in the earth. And we are going to have pressures upon our soul that is unprecedented. What are we going to do in that time? It's not just this fun little exciting thing. We've joined the internship and we're seeing Jesus as a bridegroom and we want to hang out and this is fun and we want to sit in the prayer room and we want to sing on the teams and isn't this great and we want to love Jesus more and oh, this is so weighty. Every little exchange that we do with the bridegroom, God is preparing us for what's unprecedented around the corner. And he wants friends. Friends that will give everything for him. Friends that will count all of the suffering as rubbish, as nothing. Friends that get excited to be intimate with Jesus in those times. At the end of the day, we're going to be called to love Israel. Well, love her now, but I mean, it's going to be really intense at the end. We're going to love her. She's not going to like us. What's it going to be like when we invite Jews into our home and they're not grateful? What's it going to look like when we're spit upon? Really? What's it going to look like when we're beaten? When we have given all of our lives for people and they aren't grateful? What kind of pressure is our soul going to be in at the end of the age? It's only those who have said yes to directing the longings of their heart to Jesus now, that are receiving the kisses of His mouth, that are receiving the affection of His heart, that are day and night exchanging their lies for the truth, that are day and night taking their bitterness, their anger, their rage, bringing it before Jesus and saying, "Help. Help me, God. Free me from this. Take my brokenness and give me beauty." We don't have a moment to lose. Every little circumstance in your life right now is an opportunity to grow in your love for Jesus. We can't waste an opportunity. We can't waste a hurt. We can't waste everything. The gospel is so beautiful. It's going to hedge us in. I remember when Murray and I got the call to go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I mean, if you knew me, it was heresy for me to leave Kansas City. Absolute heresy. I'm never going to leave this place. Jesus asked me to leave. And when I was wrestling with this, He said to me, "I left my Father's house." And I said, "Oh, you did? Wow. Okay, I'm in. And then I said, "But Jesus, we've gone... I think I'm going to be rejected when I get there. I mean, you know, I'm not going to be able to, you know, really be me. They don't really like me there." And He goes, "I came to my own and my own didn't receive me." I go, "Oh, yes." And then it began to change in my understanding. This was a time I got to be more intimate with my Jesus and the fellowship there that comes when we take up our cross, when we say, "Not my will, but yours be done." And I was realizing that those little things, I mean, this is a really great season, really, but yet it was costly for me. I was seeing, oh, this is nothing compared to when I'm going to be giving my life for Israel at the end of the day. Wow, you're going to use this. I got to start exercising those muscles now and getting ready for the big stuff that's coming later. Oh, Jesus, thank you. You're so kind. You're so kind. I don't want to waste this. Let me take it for all it's worth. Make it hard for me. See, in the midpoint of Song of Solomon, she says, "Awake, north winds of adversity, and come, south winds of blessing, blow upon my garden." She's actually asking for the hard things because she sees His wisdom in it. She sees that that's how He grows her up in love. That's how He makes her mature. And she also sees the secret. The more she will say yes to the suffering, the more she gets to fellowship with Him. See, when He walked the earth, He suffered, didn't He? We're only on the earth for a short time. So it's only in this time that we get to suffer with Him. Oh, the glory of suffering with Jesus. There's nothing like it. I like the word fellowship. We get to have intimate relationship with Jesus in the hard things. So we don't get to have a pity party for ourselves. "Oh, my life's hard," or, "Oh, Deborah, you don't know what I've come out of." No, you know, it is hard. And we've come out of a lot of broken situations. But every hurt, every wound is an opportunity to take it before Jesus and fellowship with Him. And exchange those lies for truth. Take our brokenness and say, "Give me beauty for my ashes. Jesus, fellowship with me. I want to grow in love." Is this making sense? Funny story. If you knew me, I mean, people just think of me as the end of the age girl. And they also think of me the end of the age girl that talks about judgments of God and things like that with a giggle, is what they've said. And you might have witnessed that already tonight. So I'm going to my beloved friend Amy Beth's wedding in London with my husband and my 8-month-year-old firstborn little girl. And we were in Kansas City, and the plane just was taking forever. I don't know what they were doing, but we weren't being able to take off and go to Chicago, where we were going to have our connecting flight to London. So we wait some hours, and, you know, that's kind of like a little stressful with my 8-month-year-old, too, you know, because I'm trying to just keep her happy and stuff while we're just waiting. And, you know, everyone on the plane is watching me with the baby, and, you know, so I'm already a little bit stressed, but I'm okay. You know, we're doing this. So, and I wish you knew my husband. Anyway, he's incredible. So we get to Chicago really late. And they tell us if you run, you might make your connecting flight. Now, there was like 15 of us that were connecting on this flight. So I'm like, that's substantial. They're going to wait for us. There's 15 of us. OK, so we're running. You can picture me with my baby. I mean, I'm just all my mom gear. I got my baby. We're running. Ellie, you can do this. You can do this, you know, and we get to the. I don't even know what they call it, but what is it? The gate. Thank you. We get to the gate. And, hard word. And the plane's still there, and I'm so excited. I'm like, yes, because, you know, I'm going to London. I want to have as long of time in London as possible, obviously. And I can't wait to see my friend, and she's waiting for me, you know, and all this. It's so exciting. And so we get to the gate, and I'm so excited. And they close the door, nearly, like, in our face. And I'm like, oh, you closed the door? The plane is leaving. And I mean, I'm like, what? We're all here. You don't have to do this. Like, I know. And okay, so then this is the moment. My husband looks at me and he goes, babe, this is nothing compared to the end of the age. The audacity. Unbelievable. I mean, oh boy, you can imagine what was going on in my soul. The pressure was upon me. Deborah, oh, I was crushed and angry and everything. And I'm like, I didn't even say anything. But he could see it written all over my face. And yes, it was totally stressing me out. You know, we have this romantic idea that we're just going to be these awesome volunteers in the day of his power, so happy and great, and this is wonderful, and oh yes, persecute me, I love it, and wow, I mean, really, that was a good wake-up call for me. I wouldn't let my husband know that. In fact, if he ever hears me tonight, he's in Zimbabwe right now, but he will go, I cannot believe you told that story. But it was funny, because then we were coming to one thing. And the way it worked out, we were coming late this year. And now I have 3 girls, right? So I have a 3-year-old and a 1.5 and a 2-month-year-old, right? And we're brilliant and we don't even bring strollers, okay? Okay, we were going to get the strollers here, so we didn't bring them. So we are now in Denver and they tell us we're going to have a 5-hour layover. And, you know, I'm like truly bummed because I was going to miss more of my sessions, and I'm already late, and I'm like, I got to get to my people, you know, and all of that. And it comes to me, babe, this is nothing compared to the end of the age. So hello, Maria from Sound of Music came out. I'm like, we can do this. We can do this. Murray is going to love me. He's going to say, oh, yes, I will want to be with you at the end of the age. You did this good, Deborah. You were happy. We sang with the girls. We can do this. No. So yeah, that's sort of funny. But honestly, it kind of sounds dumb. But in a real practical way, I have 3 girls at the airport. It's crazy. It should be. It's very stressful. Pressure. What am I going to do in that moment? Every little moment I want to use for all it's worth. Jesus, help me. How can I even help my girls right now? Teach me right now so that I can get ready for what's coming. I don't want to waste an opportunity. Every little intense fellowship moment with my husband, it's an opportunity to prepare. Really. Every time I don't want to do something. I mean, there's this joke that goes on about me that she's strong. And us strong ones, we don't like change and all of these, you know, surprises in life and delays. And so I take my strength and I commune with Him in that moment. Help me. Prepare me, Jesus. Okay, so you've given me three little girls really fast. Let me use this as my opportunity to get ready for what's coming. You're doing this and your leadership is awesome. It's perfect. So let me take it for all it's worth. So whether the things in our life seem small or big, we are exercising those muscles. And in each moment, we are learning and preparing that we will be the generation when He comes that He will be glorified in. That we will be the generation that really will worship Him in the beauty of holiness. And that begins now. Those exercising those muscles, it's so critical. It's so necessary. We don't just become righteous in a moment. In fact, it's really painful becoming righteous. You know, I mean, all the verses that I just loved when I was 19, they come back to haunt you. I mean, really, they were so romantic, and we would sing them in the prayer room, and oh, I just love them, and Babylon is fallen, Babylon is fallen. You know, Misty and I, we always like the real intense ones, so, you know, we're always like, and singing all those, and I mean, whoa. I mean, even just the simple faith, hope, and love, I mean, I just, oh, yes, with faith and hope and love, I will walk through the darkest night, I will sing. Okay, faith. Who likes to not be able to see? I mean, really, when faith is working and operating, you can't see. You can't see. It's like you're totally in the dark, moving forward. That's no fun. Really. Our spirit loves it, though. Hope. I mean, you know, this prisoner of hope thing. I just love that. Oh, return to your stronghold, oh prisoner of hope. Yes, it's me, oh prisoner of hope. Oh, man, He has to take you through the hardest things to have hope really live and have its way in you. Really bad things, really. And all my heroes in the Bible, oh, my, I wish I would have never said. I love Joseph, God. Oh, Joseph. Oh, yes. Oh, he was the favorite one. Uh-huh. Yeah, and his brothers hated him. Then he got thrown into a pit. Then he got taken away from his people. For a long period of time. He didn't see his father. He didn't see his little brother. Ouch! You know, really, our journey is going to be severe. Our journey in this generation is long and it is severe. And it's going to be full of pressure, full of surprises. But His ways are awesome. His ways are higher. His thoughts are higher, and He knows exactly what He has to do to take us from that weak, immature love and grow us up to that place of maturity that when He comes, He will be glorified in us. He knows what He needs to do. And for us that are really strong and stubborn, I mean, it just gets even more dramatic. And it's no fun. It's really no fun. But, and I, you know, I'm being kind of, I mean, really, actually, I do want to say, the sweetness. I mean, I just, as I started tonight, I'm just, Jesus, I love your leadership. I'm not offended. I bless your leadership, Jesus. It's awesome. I bless your leadership over every person in this room. Oh, it is so good. It is so right. It is so perfect. We do not know. But you know. We cannot see, but you can. I just want us to, right now, just take some time. So, everyone in this room has pain. Surprise, surprise. Take your pain before Him right now. And just do this little exercise with me. Say, I bless your leadership. Here I am. My heart hurts. Jesus, I bless your leadership. See, those are the exchanges. So just say that to Him. And don't talk to the air. Right now, He is seated on His throne. You can pick who you want to talk to. Father, the Son. But talk to Him and say, it hurts. I love to do that. I mean, those verses, they just come alive to me. I like to quote verses in those places. A lot of the Psalms. David has this beautiful language that's living and active. I love to just confess those things to Him. Psalm 105 says that the fetters, the chains on and speaking of Joseph, on his feet hurt. I like to say, the fetters, they hurt. I love You. And I bless Your leadership. These are the exchanges that we do day in, day out. Every day when we wake up, before we go to bed, all day long. These are the exchanges. We're operating out of this reality from Song of Solomon chapter 1 verse 2. We're just continually doing it. We're saying, I believe, I dare to believe that You want to answer all my longings. So I'm not looking to someone else. I'm not going to waste my time chasing other lovers. I'm even going to change my life around a bit and not even pursue the legitimate things. Here I am, Jesus. Answer my longings. Oh, He loves it. And he really takes us seriously when we come before Him with that. He goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to chase you down. I'm going to seek You out. Oh, I love You. You're my favorite one. I'm going to ruin you with what I think and what I feel about you. You are so precious to me. Oh, how I love You. Oh, I just want friends. That's why I came to the earth. That's why I gave my life. I just want friends. Oh, yes, we will fellowship. And I will answer every longing of your heart in this age and in the age to come. Keep coming. Keep waiting. Don't look to the left or the right. Keep coming. Keep waiting. I'm going to answer you. Isn't this good? This is our cry tonight. We don't have the power to resist the coming war over our affections if we have not wholly been given to the superior pleasure of the person of Jesus. In Colossians 3, Paul says something very profound. He's talking to the church in Colossae, and he's telling them how to live lives of righteousness, which, you know, obviously we want to do. And he's giving them the secret of how to resist sin and live lives in the beauty of holiness. And he says, you guys, here is the secret. Set your mind on things above. Set your mind on Jesus. Go on a treasure hunt. Go on a search of the beauty of this man. Direct your heart to Him and Him alone. And this is going to be the secret to where sin is going to become boring. To where legitimate pleasures are going to become boring. You're going to be so caught up with that which lasts forever. You're going to be so caught up with this man, Christ Jesus. You're going to be so ruined by the higher, superior pleasure of Him Himself. That sin is really just going to become boring. What we are trying to do is we kind of like to, I don't know why we do it this way, but we stare at the sin and we're like, oh, no. No. I don't like you. I won't do you again. No. I mean, really, that is, first of all, it's not fun. Second of all, it really doesn't work over a long period of time. Third of all, it really will not work for this generation. Satan is going to seduce us with every power from hell. And seducing is, he's going to seduce. That means it's going to be deceiving in its nature. He's going to try to allure us. He's trying to get in. He wants the affection. We are the generation that's going to see the battle of the ages over the human heart. The question of the hour is, who can win the affection of the human heart? Will it be Satan or will it be Jesus? There's going to be a beauty contest. Satan's beauty, the counterfeit, the ugly, but it's beauty. and Jesus' beauty. Who can win the affection of the human heart? We cannot just be those that stare at the sin and say no. We can't afford to stand at a distance from Jesus. We've got to move in to the consuming passion of His heart. We got to do whatever it takes in our lives to move in to His burning, His everlasting burning heart for us. Then we will be able to not only say no to sin, we will be able to see the plans of the enemy, the seduction for what it is. We will be able to acknowledge the counterfeit for what it is. And we will be those that will stand in the darkest night of human history, and we truly will be volunteer lovers in the day of His power. We truly will be those that give unto the Lord the glory due His name. This is what we are called to, but we cannot flirt with the sin. We don't even have time to waste on the legitimate things. We gotta move into the passion of this man. Jesus, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? But see, our generation, it's like if you saw our hearts as a hard drive. It's so full of so much, we don't have room for God. We boot up our computer and it's full. Oh, Jesus, I think there's a little space for you right over here. We've got to remove our hard drive, empty it out, so that Jesus has room in our heart. We want to give Him every chamber. We want to have Him move in. But we have to rid ourselves of things. So tonight, if you have not begun your journey, where you've been a believer, you've said yes to Jesus, but what I'm saying tonight is new. This bridegroom revelation, this Song of Solomon, this giving Jesus everything. If this is a beginning point for you, I want to ruin you with this high vision. And I'm weak, I'm immature, and I'm not where I want to be. I want to be so much farther in my friendship with Jesus. But I do want to say it works. 12 years later, he's incredible. He's wonderful. And He will answer our longings. We don't have to look to other things. We don't have to chase other lovers. Jesus is awesome. He is filled with transcendent beauty. He truly is chief among 10,000. He is worth it. How much is this man worth will be the question at the end of the age. How much is this man worth? And there will be a generation that will answer that question. We will worship Him in the beauty of holiness. We will give Him the glory that is due Him. We will say, He is worth everything. I count all things as rubbish to knowing this man. Come, Satan. Do your best. I invite the north winds of adversity. I'm not afraid of suffering. I'm not afraid of persecution. This man, I want him to be glorified in this life. I want him to be exalted. I want him to be lifted up. Watch out. This generation is going to give him the glory due him. Amen. Let's stand. Justin. See, I got totally ruined. I got Justin as the worship leader.